Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
So welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. We know it's been a while, guys. It was a crazy busy summer for all of us, but we're so happy to be back, especially with tonight's episode, Heart of the Truest Believer. So I'm here with Laura and Karen. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
And we're going to talk all about tonight's episode, which was so, so good. So first, let's start off with our initial reactions. As you can tell, I'm super enthusiastic. I really, really liked this episode. I thought it had a lot to offer. What do you guys think?
It was definitely, I liked it. It was a big thumbs up for me. I really liked the episode a lot. I think it was not what I expected. I don't know. Maybe I felt like they were going to be on the ship for a lot, like, longer or something. I don't know. So I really liked it because I felt like it got into the action right away. And that was a surprise for me. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it too. It was a lot more action packed than I thought it would be. And it really kind of like kicked off the season really well, I thought. And it was a little bit darker and scarier. And it was just, I think it was everything that I was kind of hoping season two would be, because there were a lot of ups and downs to season two, and I feel like this was kind of like a continuation of those up episodes, so it definitely made me a lot more excited for season three.
Okay, so did you guys have some favorite quotes from this episode? I thought it had a couple that were really just fun. I felt like there's a lot of sass being infused into the script, a little more so than what we're used to, especially with like even Henry. I thought Henry had some sassy lines. So did you guys, are there any favorite quotes that you had from this episode?
I had,
yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Karen. You can do yours first.
Mine was from Regina when she was talking to Snow White, and she said, "And what? You'll win her over with your rainbow kisses and unicorn stickers?" I laughed so hard at that line because it's so true. Like, Snow White is this sort of always happy kind of person, and Regina kind of just stuck it to her. But just, yeah, like you're saying, the amount of sass in this episode was just off the charts.
Yeah, that was fun. I liked the sass, but I also liked, the one that I liked was a bit of sass, but it was also touching too, when Hook is in the hold with Emma and he hands her the sword and she goes, "You're sentimental." Like, I love that one. It was just like, Captain Hook has a heart. Who knew? You know, I really liked that. Although there's probably this whole new shipping community of Hook and Balefire that's about to take off after that. That's the first thing I thought was,
it'll go along perfectly with Regina Emma. Queens, and then I don't know what we'll call it.
Oh yeah, I don't know what that ship would be called, but particularly with this like wistful look that was in Hook's eye, I was like, and there, my friends, is a ship launching. So, but anyway, I really liked it because I just like Emma's, you know, "You're sentimental." I like that one.
Yeah, I really liked when Neil was with when they first come across Robin Hood, and he's, "You don't want to see ID?" When he says that he's Balefire and he needs to check the place out, he's kind of, because Hood is like, "Oh yeah, nope, you can, yep, it's all you now, big guy."
That was good too.
That was really enjoyable.
Yeah, well, also because Hood was like, "Well, who else would claim to be that?"
Exactly.
That was great. It's like, not a lot of people going, "Yo, I'm Balefire." Rumpelstiltskin's son. The whole kingdom is putting up their hand to be Rumpel's son. Yeah, not so much.
And then the other one I really liked comes right at the end, and it's when Emma's like, "I'm going to be the leader, and this is, you know, whatever." And Hook kind of looks at her. He's like, "Well, actually, I quite fancy you from time to time when you're not yelling at me." It's very Hook and very like roguish pirate. So I thought that was really fun as well. And again, I think that's going to kind of steer us towards a path of, you know, where that will go.
Yeah,
further along.
Yeah, there was definitely more of like a likability factor, I think, with Hook this time out.
The very first scene that we get is Emma giving birth to Henry, in which we've never had any kind of, like, we know she gave birth to him, but we've never really seen it before. And what I think is really interesting in that particular scene is that as she's giving birth and everything, the lights start to flicker and everything. So even then you get this sense that she's powerful in a way, and it's affecting things around her. So I thought that was really interesting, and how adamant she was that she didn't even want to look at the baby. She, you know, she could never be a mother. That was her statement. I can't be a mother. So I thought that was a really interesting look at Emma, considering what she's doing now and where she's going, what she's going through just to get Henry back.
That's really interesting, because I kind of assumed that it was Henry that was making the lights flicker. But now that I think about it, it obviously makes a lot more sense that it was Emma.
Yeah, I just assumed it was Emma. I didn't even think it could have been Henry, because I thought it happened like while she was pushing. So that's why I assumed.
Yeah.
So we go from seeing Emma giving birth, and we kind of cut into the Jolly Roger, where Emma is with everybody, and she's very bitter. She comes across as angry and bitter to everybody. Snow and Charming are trying to talk with her. Granted, their pep talk would annoy the crap out of me on a daily basis, never mind in a situation like this, but she's incredibly angry and bitter at everybody at this point in time. How did you guys feel about that reaction from Emma towards her parents and towards everyone that was with them?
Yeah, I mean, I agree that there's a certain level of just optimistic, wholesome cheer from Mary Margaret that just can be really, really annoying. I don't think it's quite as bad as from Charming, but yeah, it's really can be a little bit irritating. But I think this is the first time we saw Emma looking annoyed at it. I think normally she just kind of tolerates it. This is the first time I think we really saw true annoyance from her about it.
Yeah, and I think it was a long time coming. I really liked her line here, actually, where she says, "What makes you guys so infuriatingly optimistic?" And I think we've all kind of been wondering that for the last two seasons, because after everything that they've been through, it's so hard to see how they could still be so optimistic about everything. But at the same time, I also really liked Mary Margaret's answer when she said, you know, as soon as I'm not, that's when, you know, we're never going to succeed. So she kind of says, like, I have to be this way, or, you know, it's just too much. And I think that's really understandable, too. So I kind of saw from both of their perspectives here.
As a viewer, I found myself getting annoyed with Snow at that point in time. Did you guys feel that at all? Or was I just feeling a little surly this evening?
No, she definitely can grate on nerves. Like, she definitely, like, you were saying, it's just a little too peppy. It's like, oh, irritating, Snow White. It's like, please go back and talk to your birds and dwarves. I definitely had a hard time with it. And especially since, I don't know, this is weird. Like, I felt like Emma was having less tolerance for them, too, once Rumple was off the ship. Because I feel like, this. I don't know, maybe this is weird, that he was kind of one of the more, like, disinterested parties. Like, he was going to do what it took. I don't know. I feel like he had the same goals. Like, his goals are obviously Henry and Balefire, and I feel like Emma's goals are the same thing, whereas other people's goal is, like, Henry, and they could care less what the hell happened to Balefire. So I feel like Emma's bitterness, I think, kind of went up a level once Rumple wasn't there.
Especially since Rumple seems to be all about doing something, whereas Snow is just kind of like talking about, we need to stay optimistic. Oh, you know, we'll find him. But Rumple's like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. You know, peace out. I'll get this figured out. And so I think that she kind of like appreciates that more.
Yeah, like weirdly, like Regina's just like, oh, I'll just use, like, Regina now is just like, oh, I'll use magic to do this. I'll use magic to do that. I'll just use magic to do this. And it's weird versus Rumple. I feel like he's more evaluating the situation and is more like, okay, so let's think this out. This is how we have to do this. It's a really interesting dynamic. Like, who thought you'd be listening to Rumpelstiltskin as the voice of reason?
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's just switch gears a little bit and talk about Greg and Tamara, because the next scene kind of goes to showing them and Henry landing on Neverland, the actual land part. They're not stuck in the middle of the ocean. And so Greg and Tamara are under this notion that by going to Neverland, that's where the home office is. But they don't really have a plan. They don't have a way to really communicate with anyone. They're just following blindly this home office. Well, unfortunately for them, the home office is Peter Pan. And he's not very nice. And so the interesting, I have to say, when when the shadow rips Greg's shadow away from him, and then Tamara gets an arrow from a lost boy, I didn't really feel so bad. Did anyone actually feel bad about that?
No. I actually kind of felt like it was a little anticlimactic because they kind of snuffed it so quickly. And not that they were like these huge villains like Regina and Rumpel have been in the past, but I guess I kind of expected them to hang around a bit more. But yeah, I didn't particularly care one way or another.
Yeah, see, for me, because I'm a big fan of The Walking Dead too, the girl who plays Tamara also has a huge role on The Walking Dead this season. Like, she had a small role last year, but it's going to be a really major role this year. And I was thinking, well, how in the heck are you going to manage both series? Well, obviously she's not. They killed her. So for me, I wasn't too surprised because I figured she was going to have to get killed off to make that work. But I didn't think it was going to happen so soon. I am also kind of interested in that, you know, I don't think they quite killed Greg. Like, they took his shadow and then he knocked over. So does that mean he's still kind of alive? And why did they choose to do that tactic with him versus Tamara? Like, I'm really curious, like, why they met the specific end that they did, other than the fact that one of them's on The Walking Dead and had to get out of there.
Yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting choice as well. He didn't look alive. And I don't know if Rumpel would have left him there if Rumpel thought he was alive. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's a good point. Like, he would have tried to revive him in some...
Okay, so Greg losing his shadow... It looked a little more violent, and he looked really pale, so I don't know. I didn't think he survived that. So I don't. Well, I guess we'll see. Time will tell if he actually survived it or not. And then, of course, Henry runs off, and he meets this convenient boy. Now, I knew it was Peter Pan because I had seen the promo pics of him. But were you guys surprised that Henry so willingly went with some random boy? Wouldn't he have learned to be a little more suspicious every now and then?
Not really, because I feel like for Henry, who he's been untrusting of, has been adults, I don't think Henry has ever had a bad encounter with a kid. So for me, I felt like because it was a kid, Henry was more willing to trust the person than if it was an adult. And I also didn't realize it was Peter Pan right away, because I guess I didn't get a very close look at the promo shots, and I'm not that familiar with the actor. So I didn't realize right away it was really Peter Pan, but I don't know. I felt like because it was a kid, maybe Henry's guard was down.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I also forgot that he was playing Peter Pan. I remember seeing his picture quite a while ago, but until they landed in that little like open space and he started acting a little shady, I had no idea. So that part really took me by surprise, which I was glad because sometimes in this show the twists are a little bit obvious, and that's one that I'm glad took me by surprise.
Yeah, his hood being up definitely helped. Like, you didn't get his full face at first, so yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I just thought it was interesting. I feel like Pan was kind of setting him up to make sure he was the truest believer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what's interesting, too? Like, when I first heard what the title for this episode was going to be, I don't think I ever in a million years thought the title referred to Henry. Did you guys ever think that that's what it referred to was Henry? I never guessed that.
Honestly, I never really think about the titles much. I know that's really bad, but I don't. Like, it was just like, oh yeah, okay. But I get why it was Henry. It makes sense when you stop and take a moment to think about it.
Totally does. Yeah. But I thought it was maybe, I thought it maybe referenced Emma or Mary Margaret. I never in a million years thought that it was Henry, and I don't know why, because, like, obviously it is kind of obvious that he is the truest, I mean, clearly, out of Storybrook, he was the truest believer, but I never thought that in a million years.
Very true.
Yeah, me neither. I didn't give it a whole lot of thought. I was trying to figure out who it could have referenced, but I thought maybe it would be, like, some random person that was only in this one episode where, you know, the story kind of revolved around them for some reason. But then once things started to kind of escalate there near the end, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this does make a lot of sense. Right, Henry has always believed from the very beginning when everybody thought he was crazy. And it makes a lot of sense. So I'm glad they went in that direction. I really liked Henry in this episode. I hope that for season three, he has a lot more to say and do, because I thought in this episode in particular, it was like one of his best.
Yeah, I like that he's kind of almost driving the action. Like the other seasons, it's a lot of Henry needs to go find Emma because he's got to explain to her, you know, like whatever, whatever. Or Henry has another fight with Regina. Like it's, you know, those seem to be like sort of the Henry pattern, you know, kind of thing. But I like that this was Henry having meaningful interaction with somebody other than Emma and Regina, pretty much. I think it's funny. I think Henry does, there's some really good scenes with Henry when he's interacting with other characters, and he doesn't get a lot of a chance to do that, I think, and this was good.
Yeah, it kind of expanded his world outside of the people that he knows as family, which is always an interesting thing for Henry because he doesn't get to do it that often. So let's talk a little bit about Rumple, because early on, Rumple kind of makes the decision that the only person that can rightfully do this without much concern is him. Did you guys get that feeling, like when he goes off and he's like, well, basically, if you want something done right, you need to do it yourself. And so he kind of, as everyone's talking about what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, he decides that I'm going to do this. It's not, you know, anyone else's decision. It will be my choice to make. And as this scene is coming about, he comes up in his like dark one outfit and Hook goes, oh, that's a great use of our time. A wardrobe change. And I just died. I was like, yes, Hook. Thank you. Thank you. I thought that was,
yeah,
like just so perfectly placed.
Yeah. I was like, reliving the olden days, are we? Yeah, that was fun. Only we didn't put on the glittery gold makeup, though.
Thank
yeah.
goodness, man. That would have been questionable. He had to, like, gear up and get ready, because clearly Peter Pan is a formidable foe.
Yeah.
So, Rumple's just like, no, Emma, you don't believe. You don't have imagination, and Neverland is the land of imagination. So you can't do it, because you don't just give yourself over to whatever it is you have to do and just do it. You're hesitant. You're always going to be a Bales Bonds person. You're always going to be looking rather than acting. So he goes off. I don't know. He spins his cane and away he goes. And we see Rumple alone throughout the episode, you know, and he runs into our favorite Lost Boy. You guys, I love that Lost Boy. I don't know who, I wish we could give him a name.
I don't know who he looks like, but he freaking looks like Jamie Campbell Bauer. Does he not look like Jamie Campbell Bauer?
A little bit, yes. Yeah, I think his name is Alex Barima. I tried to look at the credits for it. It's his first Lost Boy, so I'm assuming that would be him. Because he's only the one that he's the only one ever talks. So give him props, because he is just so good. And to be acting like opposite someone like Robert Carlyle in, you know, the role of Rumple, he is so strong. Like, you are just as drawn to him on the screen as you are to Robert Carlyle. And that's not a small feat, you know? So I am always so impressed when he's on screen. I thoroughly enjoy him as the creepy Lost Boy. So I really, really like the scene where he kind of comes up to Rumple and is like, Peter Pan welcomes you to the island, in his creepy voice that I can't imagine doing. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, these are your choices. You're welcome to play around on Neverland as long as you want, but you cannot take the boy. And so, you know, if you're for the boy, you're Pan's enemy. And Rumple lays it down pretty clearly for him. He's like, it's not whether or not I make it off the island alive, because we know that I won't. He's like, however, the question is, how many of you will I take with me? So Rumple is throwing down the gauntlet at Peter Pan and is basically saying, listen, I know I'm not going to make it off alive. I am prepared to die for that boy. But how many of you are prepared to die? So I thought that was such a good moment. I loved that whole scene.
Yeah.
And then creepy Lost Boy drops that little doll. And Rumple loses it.
Yeah, Rumple and his corn husk doll. I was like, really? Oh, wow. Rumple has dolls.
I don't know. Like, do you guys think that Rumple went to Neverland looking for Bay? Because Bay was there.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't have surprised. Well, that and the fact that Hook may or may not have been there too, and I think he still, there's a certain part of him that still wants revenge on Hook for Mila. So I think he could have previously been in Neverland for either or both purposes.
Yeah, I don't. How would he have gotten to Neverland though?
I just think there's enough. I mean, I just figure, especially where Rumple's concerned, he has just such a trove of knowledge that, you know, he would find a way. Like, there's some way that he would do it. Like, more, even more so than Regina. Like, Rumple has this never-ending cadre of magic, especially from being the Dark One, that he just knows how to do something. So that's how I figured he got there before.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a whole level of story, like a whole layer of story between Peter Pan and Rumple that we're missing. And it's big and important. Yep. Do you know what I mean?
Right. You know what I liked, though? Like, when he disappeared, how he left his cane behind. And then later on, we know, like, Bay is seeking, you know, something. And I was just like, oh, I think it's going to, maybe it's not, but I bet you it's going to be important on some level that he left his cane behind on the ship. I wonder if that's going to come into play later on.
Maybe. I mean, it makes sense. And here's, we'll get to, I have another point to make, but we'll get to it once we've actually discussed it, because I don't want to jump around too much and be crazy. So that was basically all we saw of Rumple, was him in that one scene kind of walking about. And of course he kind of takes care of Tamara and is like, yeah, I forgive you, sweetie, and I'm going to crush your heart, and that's how I forgive you. So then we kind of go back to the ship, and we have Emma, who's just still like angry. And how does Emma get rid of her anger? She does pull-ups. Okay. I was a little strange. Did you guys find that strange?
Yeah, or she's pumping up for battle by doing chin-ups.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, we'll go with it. If it works for you, we'll go with it. And so then, of course, Hook comes down, and Hook's just trying to be nice, which is an odd thing, I think, to see, because Hook's never really not snarky, and, you know, so for Hook just to try to be comforting and nice was a little, I think it catches everyone off guard, including Emma. And so he kind of says, you know, I have something for you. It was Balefire's. And they kind of have a moment where she's just like, well, I never knew him as Balefire. I've always ever known him as Neil. And they kind of share some thoughts about Neil, and he gives her Neil's sword to take with her on the island and kind of move forward with on the island. So I thought that was so, so sweet.
Yeah.
And just kind. And
like, I wonder if, like, did Balefire go with Hook willingly or unwillingly? Like, I really, like, that whole scene made me just want to know how the two of them hooked up. Like, what
Laura, we know how they hooked up.
Do we, though?
Yeah, last season. Remember when he left the Darlings, he was taken by Peter Pan's shadow, and he had matches, so he lit a match, and the shadow dropped him in the middle of the ocean, and Hook fished him out. And he lived with Hook on the Jolly Roger.
Oh, I forgot about that part.
But then he discovered something of Mila's, and he got angry, and he called for the spirits to for Peter Pan to take him away.
Oh, I totally forgot about that part.
Yeah.
Okay, now I remember. All right, cool.
Yes. Okay, so what did you guys think of that moment between Hook and Emma?
I was sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, because I feel like Hook always has something up his sleeve, but I'm really glad that it didn't, and I think that his feelings toward Neil are genuine, and it really makes me curious just like how much history they actually do have, so I'm really excited to see more of their background story.
Yeah, I felt like it was one of the very few moments where Hook was being completely honest, that he wasn't playing an angle or a game. Like, I feel like he has moments of that when he is completely and totally honest. I mean, there was some of that when we had the sequence with Hook and the giant, the first time when Emma goes up the beanstalk, I feel there were some moments of honesty there. And I feel like this was like a similar circumstance. It was one of those rare moments when he's not playing an angle or setting up a double cross, or like, it was just, he was being legit honest, which is kind of rare.
Yeah, he was definitely being genuine. And you could tell that he really cared for Neil. Like, I think that's what's so important. Like, this is something that he and Emma can share that, you know, not very few other people actually knew Balefire / Neil. Whereas he and Emma each knew him at different points in his life and were very close to him. Because, I mean, at some points it almost looked like Hook was, you know, being Balefire's father at one point, and now they're the same age, which is kind of weird.
Right.
But anyway,
It is kind of cool the way that whole age thing works. I mean, and Emma even called it out too with when she said to Mary Margaret, "Yeah, we're the same age. You know, we have the same life experience." And I think some of that comes up now too with Balefire too. He's not a kid anymore. Like I don't know. I love how they totally bend the ages around. It makes for interesting storytelling.
Yeah, it. I love it. But I think that also kind of added to his moment, too, which was fantastic. So, of course, their lovely little conversation is interrupted by the psychotic mermaids. how did you guys feel about it? I was waiting. Were you not looking in the water for Ariel? Because I was totally looking in the water for Ariel. Just to get a glimpse of red hair. But
yes, I was thinking.
Alas, I didn't.
Yeah, I was totally thinking, oh, this is going to be Ariel. Yeah, that was my first. That was definitely my first thought. Actually, I thought at first when they were being hit, I thought it was like going to be the whale from Pinocchio maybe. Ooh. That was coming into play. I didn't think mermaids so much at first. And then when I did see the mermaids, I thought of it being maybe more like sirens than mermaids. And maybe that was going to be a problem for the guys. So at first I did not think it was mermaids, let alone psycho mermaids.
Psycho vindictive mermaids.
Yeah, they were pretty interesting. They actually reminded me a lot of the mermaids from Pirates of the Caribbean 5, or 4. I guess we haven't gotten to 5 yet, have we? I can't keep track. But they were a little bit scary. Not quite as scary as the ones from Pirates, but I liked how they had a little bit more to them than just the very kind of Disney-esque mermaid vision that we have a lot of the times.
I also was kind of confused because I wasn't really sure what the goal of the mermaids was. Like, did they want to sink the ship because they just don't like ships going through? Did they want the people to drown? Did they want riches on the ship? Like, I didn't quite understand what the goal of the mermaids was.
I feel like they're a level of defense for Pan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I
do.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think I really considered that when I was watching the episode. I was considering them like an outside force, I guess because they're underwater and I figured they had like their own dominion being underwater. And you don't really think about Peter Pan swimming. But yeah, I guess I could see that. I just didn't think of it that way.
But I think Pan controls anything and everything in and around Neverland. And so the mermaids are his line of defense. And that's why they were... because they were attacking the ship with their tails like they wanted to break it open so that it would sink.
Right, that I knew. No, I totally understood they were looking to sink the vessel. I just wasn't clear as to what their goal... like, I was not interpreting it as they were the minions of Pan. I didn't really think of that too much.
Yeah, that's what I went with. That's the only thing I could think of that was like relevant for them to be like, let's bust this place up. So I don't know. And then the psycho mermaid that they bring on board, and Regina is all like, let's take her out. We're done. Like, Regina is on this kick of, if I can't fix it with magic, we're just going to get rid of it. Kind of thing. Like,
yes!
She's really like, oh, we're done now. They've taken my son. This is Peter Pan. I've reached my limit. I'm on a ship with everyone that I despise. How am I going to make this right? I'm just going to magic everything that's in my
way. Yeah, like all of a sudden she's little miss, get out of my way. I have no time for this. Here comes a fireball. Like it's going, I'm like, really? Okay. Yeah.
It was interesting. She's a little high strung at the moment. I'd be careful if I were anyone on that ship. So she gets really super annoyed with the mermaid who blows her conch shell, summons this lovely storm, and turns her into wood, which I think is kind of funny. So then we have the issue of the fighting, and the storm continues to get worse the more that they begin to fight.
Yeah, which I thought that was an interesting kind of pickup on Emma's part. I did not figure that out nearly as quickly as she did.
Well, the mermaid even makes a statement of, I'm not going to have to do anything. You're going to do it to yourselves.
Right. So she picks up on their emotions of some part. So maybe that is a connection to Pan, because I feel like Pan picks up on your emotions too. So maybe that's something.
Possibly. So she does that whole summoning the storm thing, and they begin to fight, which, you know, is super not effective, because then it creates a raging storm, and they continue to fight, the storm gets worse, and nobody realizes what's going on, so Emma decides she's going to take matters into her own hands. First of all, can we just talk about the fighting between Charming and Hook? and Regina and Mary Margaret? The fact that Mary Margaret punches Regina.
I kind of enjoyed that.
I was like, what so just did happened? Snow White is pulling out all the stops right now. Like, she's just like, nope, we're done.
Yeah.
So I
much prefer Snow when she's like shooting her bow and arrow and punching people in the faces than when she's being all optimistic and stuff. Like, this is the side of Snow that I think, I mean, obviously she was under a little bit of duress, probably was a little bit overreactive, but I really like the badass Snow White compared to the one with like, oh, if we just think positive thoughts, then everything will be okay.
Yeah, like, I like the non-Stepford Wife version of Snow. Like, like, there are moments where you're like, oh my gosh, like, just enough with the endless optimism already. Like, it's good to just see her not so perky. She's kind of irritating when she's perky. And then the fight between Hook and David was just sort of hilarious. It was just like, let me sissy slap you with my hook. I mean, it was like really bizarre. It was like little, like, hand flappy punching, and then like his wrist gets caught in the hook, and I'm like, this is, wow, poor fight choreographer who had to come up with a way of making that whole thing work well. That must have been tough.
But those two just, like, what starts off the fight between David and Hook is Hook goes, let the slags fight it out. And then David takes offense to him calling his wife a slag.
Yes.
And just, and I'm like, really, boy? Boys. So, but like, David definitely has a lot of animosity towards Hook. I'm not really sure what the exact reason is, but he's very at Hook the whole time.
Well, David also had, I mean, I just felt like he was just kind of high-strung the whole time he's on the ship, too. Like, not for nothing, but he looked awfully ready to go harpoon a bunch of mermaids. Did anybody else have a problem with him, like, shooting arrows at, I don't know. I was like, he's going to harpoon them. Like, I don't know. I had a problem with that, too. I was like, David's awfully violent all of a sudden.
Yes. No, I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, I realized that the mermaids were attacking the ship, but I felt like I was kind of scared. Like, I didn't want them to die, and I don't know if he actually hit any of them or not, or, like, if he was just scaring them away, but it was really violent for him.
It was. And then he goes to, like, fillet the mermaid, as Regina calls it, and Snow is all like, yeah! So they rectify that situation. He kind of pulls back a little bit from that. But yeah, his character seems a little bit more aggressive than it normally is. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that continues. If it's kind of like, it's almost like there's another male who's capable of doing things in the mix. So now what happens? He's not the only one that can fight a fight. Like, Hook can fight his own fights. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And Hook has experience in Neverland. So does that make Hook more knowledgeable? And is that, like, kind of threaten David's leadership role, if you will?
Well, I think Hook is the first, like, non-magical person for him to deal with. I think you're onto something. Because normally, like, Rumple's around and there's a certain of, I don't want to say deference so much, but there's a certain amount of, like, he's only going to accomplish so much without magic. Versus now there's another guy and, you know, realistically speaking, he may not know any more than David does, or probably doesn't have a skill set that's too far beyond David's skill set. So, yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I thought that was a super interesting thing when they started to fight. It just kind of made me laugh. So once we go from the fighting and everything, we kind of get a little bit more of Neil in Fairy Tale Land. And as we all know...
I have a question really quick, actually. In terms of, like, Emma seeing what was going on with everybody and then obviously jumping over the side of the ship, which did not work out too great for her. Why do you guys think, and maybe this was in here and I just sort of missed it, but why do you guys think she wasn't affected like everybody else was?
I think she was. She just ran out of people to fight. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, why get, you know, you know, it's not going to end well getting in the middle of either of those two sets of people. And it came down to, well, somebody's got to steer the ship or we're all going to drown. So I felt like it was just sort of, I think it was just sort of coincidence that she got the perspective of standing back. If there was like another person there, then yeah, then it may have, like, she would have been fighting that person. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it almost seems like Emma's also a little bit different. She didn't really have, like, there are pent-up emotions between Regina and Snow and Hook and Charming. Like, those exist. So I think what the mermaid did was bring all of that to the surface even more. Because they had been fighting on and off even prior to the mermaid's coming. You know what I mean? So, and Emma hasn't really been fighting with anyone. She's just angry. It's not necessarily about the fight, but about the anger. So for her, it's different. But for those two groups in particular, there's a lot of different emotion going on even previously. It's like this undertone that exists between them. Whereas Emma didn't really have that with anybody.
Yeah. I wonder if there's something more there, just because, like you said, she is kind of different, and I think that plays into it. I also kind of wonder if maybe it's because she grew up in the real world, like our world, if that could have a factor in it too, because she does have a lot of anger, and I feel like she would have been fighting somebody if she was like everybody else, but because she's not, it had to have had a hand in it. But I'm just kind of curious if that's going to come up again later. Like, she's not going to be affected by something.
It's very possible. And it's definitely something to keep in mind as we watch more shows and more episodes to see if she's affected in Neverland differently than others that are in Neverland. Definitely an interesting idea. I like it. I like it. So, moving on to Neil, because Neil also, thank goodness, we know that he's alive. We get to see some of the things that he's doing in Fairytale Land. So we know that he is with Aurora and Mulan. And interestingly enough, Prince Julian, who clearly recovered from his Wraith
experience.
Right. Obviously, we're not going to know how that happened. We just know that he was returned safely. So we get to see him. He wakes up and they're all like, oh, did an arrow shoot you? He's like, yeah, not really. Like a 45. So
yeah, that was funny.
He's got some good lines too. I enjoy that. So he is kind of searching. He's looking for Emma, and Mulan is like super suspicious. She's like, you're wearing clothes from Emma's land. And he's like, you know Emma? And Mulan's like, wait, you know Emma? And is all like defensive and like, no, you can't know Emma. This isn't happening kind of thing. It was interesting to see her protectiveness over Emma. You know, like, she had this vibe of like, oh, no, wait, we're not going to do this unless I know you, like, you're safe. So then Aurora kind of is like, oh, I'll walk the dream world. Did anyone else find that kind of an odd thing?
That was actually cool. I liked that because I have to say I found Aurora kind of irritating all last season. So I actually liked that Aurora had some sort of skill that she has now acquired that is useful, because she spent an awful lot of time last season being the victim or being manipulated. So I was like, oh, cool. At least she learned something from being in the fire world and is willing to go and do something useful with it. So I kind of liked that.
Yeah, so did I. She was a lot more proactive in this episode, and it was just really neat to see that. But at the same time, I just feel like that fire world or the dream state or whatever we're calling it, like, it was so terrifying before. It kind of surprised me that she sort of just, like, jumped at the opportunity to go back in there. And I know she said she got, like, trained or whatever, how to walk through it and kind of control it a little bit. But it just, considering they don't even really know Neil, I was surprised that she was so willing to do that.
Yeah, I think that's what kind of threw me off is her. It was just such a quick, oh, I'll go to the dream world for you kind of thing that I thought it was kind of odd. Not that I don't like her proactivist, right? I love that. I like Aurora being a little bit more forward and, like, stuff like that, but I just thought it was odd that she offered so quickly.
Yeah, I think the magic thing here was that it was Emma, that they knew Emma. If that had not been true, then I think it would have been a very different scenario, but because he dropped Emma's name so quickly, I think that's what did it.
Possibly, yeah. So then we kind of... then Neil starts talking to Mulan and is like, really, Mulan? There's a movie about you.
I died laughing at that. That was so funny. Can I just tell you, I want to know. So, like, has Neil been going to watch all the Disney, like, Neil, Disney movie watcher? I mean, seriously, like, I just want to know, is, like, does Neil watch all the Disney movies? I just want to know, because, like, Neil, I don't know, to me he looks like, what do you think, he's like late 30s, early 40s, like, is that how old Neil probably is? Like, when did Mulan come out? Like, he would not have been, like, a kid watching Mulan, you know what I'm saying? Like, he would have definitely been at least a teenager or in his 20s when that movie came out, I'm thinking, so can you imagine, like, a guy, like, you know, walking in to go see the Disney movie who's, like, not there, like, with his girlfriend or kids, or it's just not typically the... you know, the stereotype, I guess, that goes along with that.
And he liked it. He was like, yeah, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I just think that's... You just sort of wonder if, like, he's had this entire side hobby of, like, tracking fairy tales that we don't know about.
Yeah, it is kind of... Well, you almost wonder if he is just to see who comes out of his world, to see what if the stories match up. Do you know what I mean? You're almost wondering if he was trying to track things himself.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I thought that was really interesting. And then we have Neil and Mulan kind of go off to his father's castle and have him look around. And there we meet none other than the very charming Robin Hood, which I was surprised to see Robin Hood so early. I didn't think he was going to be in the first episode.
No, I didn't either. And it didn't bug me that, I mean, I know they recast the role because the guy they originally cast is now no longer available. But I really did like the charisma of the guy who's playing it now. I thought he was pretty cool, so I liked him. But there better be Maid Marian. I'm going to be very upset if Maid Marian isn't around. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, boy.
I know, and Jessica isn't here to chime in on the Robin Hood comments with me. But, yeah, we need Maid Marian.
Yeah, so I thought I liked this edition of Robin Hood. I really do enjoy him. He was kind of very gallant and... a nice cross between lots of different Robin Hoods that I think we've seen over time. And so he's kind of like, well, you know, this is your place too. And so Neil picks up the wooden stick, which happens to be Rumple's old cane. And he kind of does this swinging it around thing. Does that seem odd to anybody else?
Yeah.
Does anyone else pick up a cane and whip it around?
Yeah,
Eleven?
I was like, yes, young grasshopper, you shall learn. You know?
Yeah, it was very strange. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And then lo and behold.
I don't know. This actually didn't really bother me that much. And I'm really interested in knowing how much Neil knows about magic and the sort of maybe even control he has over magical objects and that sort of thing. Because we know that he hates it and we know that he left pretty early. But at the same time, he seems really, really knowledgeable about it. And so I feel like there's like a missing piece to the puzzle there. And again, I mean, I just want to know more of his background. And it does look like they're going to be exploring a lot more of that this season. So I'm going to be really interested in seeing that.
Yeah. Like how much did he absorb in everything? Exactly.
Here's the thing that I caught that I thought was really interesting. They talk about blood magic. And that's the reason why Neil can use the cane.
Right.
Because he is the descendant of Rumpelstiltskin.
Right.
And it felt like there should be more to that than, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like, again, we're missing some piece there.
Or it's a huge setup, like, down the line, because obviously Henry is of his blood, Henry is of Emma's blood and Snow's and Charming. Like, yeah, it's going to go
about
somewhere,
blood magic
obviously.
Specifically with Rumpel, because he spells things to be... recognizable by blood magic. Do you know what I mean?
Right, and the concept that Neil said is the most important thing to my father was family. It's actually kind of interesting because I think that's the most important thing to Mary Margaret. It's the most important thing to David, and in her own warped little way, it's the most important thing to Regina.
Right, but I don't know, just the way that Neil said it, I almost wonder if somehow Rumpel has another child that he doesn't know about. Like, that was what came to my mind. The way they were talking about blood magic and about family and about everything else, I got the distinct feeling that there's something there that we're missing.
Okay, so just who do you think it is that slept with Rumpelstiltskin? I just want to be clear. Who you think slept with Mr. Gold here?
Hey, I didn't say, you know, it was a practical thought. It just, the way they talked about blood magic and you know, being related to and all of that stuff, that was the only thing, like, it just struck me that there was something more there that they were missing.
No, I actually completely agree with you, Jen. I cannot for the life of me think of what part it was, like, specifically that this thought crossed my mind, but I was like, oh my god, what if Rumpel has another kid? And I wish I could remember, there was like a specific line or a scene, a shot or something, I don't remember what it is, but I was definitely thinking the same thing, so I don't think you're way off. Maybe we'll be surprised later on.
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on the fact that somebody would have, I mean, because like, the Dark One, I mean, there's sort of that obvious ick factor that comes into it. Like, I don't know. I'm just...
Laura, we don't need the practicalities of it. Well, we just know that it's a possibility. We don't need the details.
I know. I'm trying to keep this PG-13 because my mind right now is just... Yeah, I...
Ugh. Laura's going to have to turn off her mic for a minute.
I know. I just can't get past the glittery gold paint. I'm having a hard time with that.
So I'm wondering though if like the Dark One has groupies or something, and yeah, maybe.
Oh my god! I'm sorry.
I can see that happening.
The Dark One groupies. It's Tinkerbell. Oh my god.
Well, oddly enough, they did say Tinkerbell would be connected to someone that we wouldn't expect in a most unusual way.
Oh, good God.
There you go.
That is going to be oh so wrong if that turns out to be true. Oh my gosh.
Anyway, some food for thought for everybody. So let's get to the kind of like the last big thing that we saw in this episode, which was Peter Pan. What is Peter Pan's endgame by taking Henry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like it's, well, the title of the episode being The Heart of the Truest Believer and him saying that that's what he wanted. What does somebody who believes that strongly make him more powerful? Does he tap into that energy? I just feel like they're all talking about how Neverland is the land of belief and magic and imagination, and Henry has all of those things in spades. So I'm wondering, is that what powers Neverland? Is Henry some sort of energy source, or I don't know. I'm curious.
I have this weird vision of him like as a battery packed, like plugged into the island now and charging it. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just, and you clearly see that he wanted to test Henry before he decided he was definitely the truest believer. And he tested him by using the fairy dust, the pixie dust.
Right, the pixie dust.
You know, and so I think it was just such an interesting way. And can I just tell you, the kid that is playing Peter Pan is so fantastic. Like, he is just so well balanced at being kind of creepy and nice. And I don't know. I love the way he is playing Peter Pan. I just love it.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked it. I definitely liked that a lot.
Him and the creepy Lost Boy need their own show. That's all I'm saying. No. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I don't know. I wish I had more insight to it, but I just don't know what it is that he wants. Like, it's so weird. Because you don't have a lot of insight into this Pan and why he's kind of maniacal and the way he is and why he's searching for Henry so
long. Right, and I don't feel like, I mean, interestingly enough, it's not really been a talking point among anybody else. Like, obviously, I feel like Hook and Rumpel may or may not know on a certain level why he would want Henry or why that could be bad. But it's kind of weird. Like, nobody else has asked the question. You know, everybody else is like, okay, we have to get Henry back. But it's kind of weird that, like, Regina or Snow or Emma are not, at least I don't feel like they're persistently asking the question enough of why does he want Henry? It's kind of interesting that they're not raising that question.
This is very true. That it hasn't yet, because they haven't even like acknowledged that it's Peter Pan that actually wants Henry.
Right. So it's an interesting, you know, you'd think you would go a little more on, well, like, what do I know about this guy? You know?
Yeah. I wonder if it comes back to Neil for some reason. Like, I think that the heart of the truest believer is like its own thing, but Neil spent a lot of time on that island. And so I just feel like there's got to be a connection there. And the fact that Henry is Neil's son has to be important somehow.
Right, but what sure. happens is when they brought Neil to the island, when they took him off Hook's ship and they brought him to the island, they had the picture of the boy that they were looking for, and it was Henry's picture, and Bay was still a child.
Interesting. So they have a way of telling the future. Yeah, it's like my head is getting like all turned upside down trying to
yeah.
get it right. It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So, anything else about this episode that you guys want to talk about?
I have one that's a little, only because, like, they've sort of mentioned this about Regina getting some sort of love interest this year, and this team being known for their lost history and love quadrangles. I started feeling like the obvious Emma situation, Emma's going to be consistently torn between Neil and Hook. Like, I feel like that's going to be an Emma thing. But I'm wondering if we throw Regina into the mix, into that somehow, because there's definitely a Regina-Hook chemistry. But the other possibility I felt like there was a bit of a connection between Neil and Mulan. Like, I
was
wonder,
thinking the same thing.
I'm wondering if the quadrangle is going to be Mulan, Emma, Neil, Hook. That's kind of, because I could see how Hook and Mulan might work. So, I don't know. I'm just wondering. They haven't said they're going to do a quadrangle, but I feel like this is the team that does that, so they're going to. And I'm curious how Regina fits into it. Maybe it's like dueling quadrangles or like a hexagon. I don't know.
Talk about Regina and Robin Hood.
Yeah, I could see that. I will be really annoyed at that, but I could see that.
Yeah, I thought there was talk about that. But I could be wrong.
I can definitely see a connection between Neil and Mulan, although I feel really bad for Mulan because I feel like she keeps picking guys that are, like, taken.
Yeah, really.
I really want her to be happy.
Yeah, but I think Mulan and Hook could be cool. I think
that would
be
interesting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But let's see what happens, but that could be, like, really cool.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know about Regina and Hook. I don't know. I don't know if I like that. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see how that all plays out. Because I definitely got a vibe with Neil and Mulan. Like, they just played off each other really well. And, you know, I think it was a nice balance for Mulan, considering she's now stuck with the lovebirds.
yeah, seriously. That must, yeah. Yeah, that must.
That's going to be awkward.
Right. Well, I'm also curious, like, who else is still traipsing around the Enchanted Forest now? You know, so, like, Robin Hood's there and, you know, I also want to know, like, who else is still around.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess only time will tell. And clearly we'll get Ariel and her prince, and we'll get Tinkerbell, who could play any number of roles in this whole thing. So,
yeah, I'm dying to figure out who the person she's going to be connected to. Two is like, I mean, when we were at Comic-Con, they said Tinkerbell has a surprising connection to somebody on this panel. Do you have a crack theory as to,
I think,
like,
it was on the
is?
Ship. I didn't even think it was the whole panel. I thought it was the actual ship.
So that would narrow it down to David, Mary, Margaret, Regina, Emma, and like Hook is just too obvious, so it couldn't possibly be Hook. But like, who
and Rumple.
So who do you
so
think?
So back to my theory about Rumple, Tinkerbell daughter connected.
Oh, God.
That's what I'm going with.
The twin that Mila never told Rumple he had. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that could...
I don't know. But yeah. You know what I... Like, I don't know. Right. I just feel like there's a connection there. we'll see. I guess time will tell. What isn't Tinkerbell's episode like episode 3 or 4?
Yeah, I think they said it'd be episode 3, so definitely our questions right. will be answered by then.
In a couple of weeks, we'll hopefully we'll get some more insight and have some more educated guesses and something, you know, something good will come out of that. We'll see. We'll see.
Yay.
So does anyone have anything else before we wrap up this episode?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
So that wraps up this episode of Onceable. Please make sure to leave your comments, questions in the comment section of the podcast. We definitely check there. You can also tweet us at Once Upon News. And we are so happy to be back doing shows for you guys. So anytime you guys have questions, theories, please make sure you put them in the comments because we love reading everyone's theories and thoughts. So thanks for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.